Welcome to the Evolved Caveman, where men learn to be successful and happy with your host, Dr. John Schinnerer, as he shares the most impactful ideas and practices for you to get the most from your relationships, your work, and from your life. Now here's Dr. John.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. John back with the latest episode of The Evolved Caveman, and we have come down to Southern California for the last couple weeks to escape the fires and smoke in Northern California. So if there's any technical difficulties, please bear with us. Today, I am thrilled to have with me Coach Alex Van Houten. And Alex, as a personal trainer and nutritionist of 14 years and carrier of a brutal genetic disorder, which I'd like to find more out about that, and busy father of two boys, ages 1 and 5, he knows the struggle of cutting through the garbage of nutrition and exercise industries. 3 years ago, he founded Defining Dad BOD to help busy parents build stronger, healthier families based on new science and clinical practice. His podcast, Defining Dad BOD, is a listener-supported enterprise that puts out practical content every week to help listeners do everything from lowering their body fat to choosing the right supplements. Alex, how you doing? Thanks for coming aboard.
I'm kicking butt and taking names, brother. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for coming aboard. I appreciate it. So tell me, let's just start off with the typical question that I ask my guests. So tell me a story of you at your very best. So what's the story of struggle to sort of triumph?
I appreciate that. My whole story, I feel like, is quite the struggle. So you have the background in psychology to understand the Jungian archetypes, right? Mm-hmm. My archetype that seems to override much of my story is the warrior. So you find me at my best when you find me in the middle of something that requires you to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and keep moving forward, fighting the battle anyway. And so that throughout my life, that's been a recurring theme. But I would say most recently, I hurt my back. It's something that happens regularly with Ehlers-Danlos. That's the genetic disorder I wrestle with. I hurt my back bending over in the garage to pick up one of my kids' Captain America figurines, right? And this thing weighs like, I know, it weighs half a pound. Yeah. Exactly. So you know, my workout a week ago was 315 pound deadlifts, and I didn't have a problem with that. I can do that just fine with no injuries, but heaven forbid I mindlessly bend down and pick up this thing, right? So I've done this many times in my 32 years wrestling with this thing. I'm like, all right, I got to take a step back. I've got to do this. I've got to adjust my thing here. So I ran yesterday and that was great. And today I did a light back workout and everything feels good there. And so I'm moving forward and it's sweet. My wife was like, man, you didn't even get irritable this time when you were in so much pain. And it was hard for me to tell you were in pain. I'm like, I think I'm getting better at this.
What is separating that part? Is it muscular pain? Is it nerve pain? Is it bone pain?
Good question. With Ehlers-Danlos, the core of the problem is collagen synthesis. So ligaments and tendons aren't as structurally sound as they should be. They're really stretchy. So what happens is you get degeneration in joints because of the hypermobility. And so you end up with nerve pain, muscle pain, and then tendons and ligaments are easily damaged as well.
Oh man, I'm so sorry, brother. That is brutal.
I appreciate that. But this struggle has been really helpful in me helping other people. So I'm both thankful for it and, you know, happy to beat my head against the wall a few times a week if required.
And I can definitely sympathize. I've been dealing with spinal stenosis the past year. So just, you know, the vertebrae continues to grow and the bone impinges on the nerves in the spine. And for a year, I've been in just excruciating pain on and off. And I recently got spinal surgery about 2 months ago, and I'm just now getting back to like going in the waves and walking and playing frisbee. And so now I got to take the next step and continue to get back into shape. But it does bring up this interesting question of, because I've noticed the pattern in my own life of, you know, I'm in a workout routine, I'm going to the gym or playing ultimate or playing soccer or whatever it is, I'm in good shape, and then injury comes up or illness. And it throws everything out of whack. And then I've got to get back into the routine. And maybe you could speak to that a little bit, because I think that's something that haunts a lot of people, not just men, of, you know, you get thrown off your workout routine. How do you best get back into it?
Yeah, there's a lot we're saying there. You know, from a habit perspective, anytime you're thrown off your wagon, so to speak, and you fall off the wagon, as people like to say, whether you were thrown off or fall off can be another conversation completely. But but anytime you fall off the wagon, there's that part of you that's like, well, now what? Because for many people, their nutrition is structured on their workout program. You know, I did this today, therefore I can eat these things without them being detrimental to me. Or for many people, their entire schedules on revolve around their workout program. I went to the gym, I changed, I showered, I did this thing, and now I can go to work or whatever. So, you know, for the work that I do with clients, one of the things that I tell them, and this is from the School of Hard Knocks, is you still need to maintain the habit of taking care of you, even if it's not through exercise at this moment, right? Mm-hmm. So it helps to pick up a book. If you can, you could still go for walks. For most people, injuries and illness included. I also advocate for journaling and writing and maybe even planning out what your workouts are going to look like again when you get to do those things, right? And then the last piece is I often will recommend my clients get their support system on board around their nutrition, because that's the thing that happens from a health and fitness perspective is when you're injured or when you're ill, the nutrition habits that you created around that healthy habit, there's no cognitive dissonance anymore between your healthy habit of exercise and the healthy habit of eating well. And so if you can marshal your support system and say, hey, you know, I'm feeling down in the dumps, this has been really hard on me, I feel kind of like a caged bird, being able to express those things and then saying, but I'm still committed to moving forward well with my nutrition. And so I want you to help me stay accountable with that. No Domino's pizza in the middle of the night kind of thing, just because I'm in pain, right? So those are a few things I'd say. There's a lot more worth saying, but that's a good start.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, just having that awareness of connecting your workout routine with how you eat. Because I've seen that where, pardon me, where I was having protein shakes in the morning with a bunch of, you know, other nutrients thrown in, and then I'd go to the gym. And then I'd follow it up with another protein shake of some sort. After I, you know, especially with COVID, with the gyms shutting down, I realized like I've gone back to cereal. And it's like, that's not going to do it. but I, it's interesting, and maybe we can get to this later, of, you know, how do you work out when all the gyms are shut down?
Mm. Yeah.
But one of the things I wanted to get to kind of your sweet spot, which is the dad bod. So what is the dad bod, and how do I get one? I want to look like Leo and pull women like Leo does, Leo DiCaprio.
Right. So
that's all about dad bod, right?
That's right. That's the thing. You know, some of the magazines lately would like you to think that the balding beer bellied caricature of the man that you see, hey, your bald looks good on you though. but the idea of a dad bod being more attractive in general to people who are asked, you know, would you rather a guy have six pack abs or be a little fluffier on the midsection? You know, great defined arms, but I still drink beer and eat pizza on the weekends, right? That idea, you know, is not just, you know, recent cultural stigma or movement. This is built in biologically to a man. When a lot of guys don't know this, when a woman has a baby, it's very obvious that her body goes through an amazing amount of changes, right? You know, she nurtures the baby through 9 months of pregnancy. Her body changes so that she can breastfeed the infant. Even her brain's different. At the moment of birth, there's a flood of oxytocin that unites the mother to child, right? Now, in the father, something very different happens in his body, but nobody knows. Like, it's from the outside looking in, you know, that nobody knows that anything's happening with dad. But at the moment that a child is born, and researchers are still up in the air about how this actually happens, but at the moment the child is born, his testosterone drops to about a third of his normal testosterone level and stays that way, slowly increasing to his normal until his next youngest child is age 4. And so what we have is a man who, let's say your normal free testosterone is 800. That's, you know, pretty average for a mid-20s guy, early 30s guy.
Give the range for testosterone levels, if you would. And I know there's a little bit of debate about that, but just give it an idea.
Sure. It varies by age significantly, but for free testosterone for guys ages 20 to 40, we're looking at a very wide range of about 300 to 1200 being natural, right? When you start dipping below that 300 mark, you start getting medical symptoms of low testosterone. And medical symptoms are things like weight gain, muscle loss, weakness, depression, difficulty sleeping, acne. There's quite low libido, things
brain
like that.
Fog.
Brain fog, exactly, yes. And so you put those things together, and that's low testosterone. Well, what a lot of guys don't know is when their child is born, whatever their testosterone was before the child was born, you're about to experience a third of that. And in guys, the neurotransmitter serotonin is tied very closely to testosterone, which means you can also get a lot of mental symptoms with this related to depression, right? Mm-hmm. And so I work with a lot of guys who will say, you know, my son was born or my daughter was born, and, you know, I don't know what happened to me, but I've gained like 30 pounds. They call it sympathy weight for the you know, not so pregnant lady anymore. And that's not sympathy weight. It's not like, oh, she's eating brownies, I'll eat brownies too. It's your neurotransmitters are low, and your biological ability to metabolize carbohydrates to keep good muscle tissue around, you've created the biological basis for dad bod. And so that's actually a good natural process, by the way, because, you know, high testosterone with a little crying baby in the middle of the night, it's probably not a good thing. Like, we wouldn't have lasted long as a species. Your show is called The Evolved Caveman. Like, it's a good thing cavemen evolved not to shake the baby in the middle of the night, right?
Well, yeah, and I do think, I was thinking about that, like, what are the reasons why our testosterone would drop when our children are born? And it makes a lot of sense on an evolutionary scale, in that
absolutely
I think you become a better father, you become more caring, more nurturing, more patient, and mm-hmm. and less prone to irritability and, I guess, impatience, but aggression, anger. And so it's interesting that evolution or God, depending on where you fall in that debate, or somewhere in the middle, has kind of designed this to help us out, to keep us close to home, to keep us in a relationship, to keep us with our children.
Yeah, and you say in a relationship, that's a very important part of this too. Guys are like, oh, okay, well, my testosterone's low, how do I raise my testosterone? I'm like, do you really want the same testosterone you had before this? Because, you know, maybe your wife's not really in the mood right now. Maybe things are a little hard in the house. Maybe you don't need to be looking around at other women right now, because that's what testosterone does for a guy. He's like, hey, you know, like, who's mateable around here?
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think when your children get older and they're, you know, towards leaving the house, that's a really good time to look at testosterone replacement therapy or testosterone augmentation. Mm-hmm. Because we do lose testosterone. Yeah. From what I understand, we lose testosterone a little percentage each year after 30, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. You have a steady decline right alongside your muscle tissue. Mm-hmm. Basically, they're right linked together. And the goal, you know, obviously in the work that I do with Defining Dad Bod, the goal is not boost everybody's testosterone. The goal is, look, these are the biological factors that are working against you in having a healthy, happy body. Because once upon a time, we didn't have freezer pizza. You know, the low testosterone, low serotonin, plus freezer pizza, brownies, and bourbon, you put those things together, and that's the dad bod. But that doesn't mean, although we have the biological basis for it, that doesn't mean that there aren't healthy, intelligent things we can do, so that when our kids are teenagers, we're still giving them a run for their money. We're not the fat guy on the bench watching them live life, and we can't keep up. We can't do things with them. We can't experience life with them, right? So that's what Defining Dad Bod is all about, is, hey, this is the biology. Now, what can we do intelligently about creating strong, powerful, masculine fatherhood?
So let me ask you this, because I've had this debate with some friends locally. What can we do to naturally increase testosterone? And then maybe we can get into what can we do to augment our testosterone in, I don't know, medical means.
Yeah, great question. So from a natural perspective, it's I hate to say that it's not rocket science, but it's not rocket science. So there's a bunch of different things that, if they're lined up really well, we will have better testosterone for ourselves. So the first thing you need to understand is that your insulin, your cortisol, are the foundation for your androgynous activity, meaning that if you are insulin resistant and you are regularly stressed and not recovering well, then those two hormone systems will pull resources from the resource pool that creates testosterone.
Okay, can I pause you there? Because yes. I mean, that at least one of those aspects seems like every man I work with, which is they're stressed all the time and we do not recover well. I see that sympathetic nervous system, the stress response, that fight, flight, freeze response in action all the time in most men that I deal with, and we're not 100%. Aware or we're not able to turn it off. And that stress response is supposed to go on, off, not just on.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Well said. And so one of the things that's really helpful around that, you know, it's easy to say you need to sleep, but you do. That's a part of it. You need to be able to turn off, right? And healthy sleep habits are a part of that. Setting a bedtime, having a normal wake time, getting the room dark enough, making sure it's cold enough, taking a few supplements if you need to get that under wraps. Stop caffeine after 12 p.m. so that it's not in your system to mess up your sleep today. Those are all things around sleep. But one of the other things that's important is your exercise programming. Because you would say, oh, I'm a really high-strung guy. How is stressing my body through exercise going to help me relax? And what's powerful about that is we find in the exercise literature that exercise forces a parasympathetic nervous system response. So if you go for a run right now, well, maybe not because you're recovering from surgery, but you know, let's say you weren't. Let's say you just go for a jog. It doesn't have to be a crazy jog. You had a high stress day. The anxiety neurotransmitters are high. Like you're kind of on edge, right? After the run, there's a brief 5 to 10 minute window where you're going to be the most relaxed you can be all day today because you have done the activity, and your body's natural process after an activity is to recover. Now, what a lot of guys do is they'll work out. They're like, all right, I got my workout done. They grab their gym, you know, flip their gym clothes off and then go back to work or whatever. And they miss that little window. They miss that 5 to 10 minutes of meditative time, music time, dry sauna time, yoga time, stretching time, whatever you want to do with that time. Some of my guys journal during that time and journal their intentions and some thoughts that came to them during their workouts and stuff. But the point is that brief period can actually be a really powerful part of lowering your overall cortisol and getting yourself off of that hamster wheel, because you do want that in exercise. You want a controlled stress with a positive recovery afterward.
Alex, that's a great, great point in the sense that a lot of the men that I deal with, I think, aren't even like they confuse being relaxed with being tired. And so they don't even know what relaxed feels like anymore. And then, so I think it's a great strategy to go, okay, go work out. And then pay attention to your body. Tune your attention into your body, neck and below. That's relaxation. That's the state that we're trying to get back to with some regularity throughout the day.
Well said. And don't spend it on social media. Don't answer messages. You're like, I checked out of my day for an hour to work out. Now I got to get back to my email. You know what? Those people can wait for 5 more minutes, like while you breathe, they'll be all right.
Sorry to interrupt. That anxiety drives us. I call it, you know, kind of an urgency, the addiction to urgency. And I think so many of us get so wound up about our to-do lists, and we worry about disappointing people or letting people down or getting judged negatively, that we just are driven like a hamster on a wheel. And it's like, no, understand, you're going to die with a full to-do list. There's always going to be shit to do. So just get comfortable with that idea. They can wait another 5 minutes or a day. They'll be okay. And just relax for a minute.
So well said. So well said. I love that. I'm going to steal that, by the way. You're going to die with a full to-do
list. All for you.
So chill out. Thanks for that. Managing that stress response is extremely important. So getting the sleep and then understanding it's not just relaxation. It's what does parasympathetic response even mean? Because your body was designed to work hard, grind hard, but then recover so that you're not beating a dead horse all the time. But that will have a significantly profound effect on testosterone from a natural perspective.
Well, and this just makes me think of the parallel with building muscle, right? So tell me about the process of building muscle. You go into the gym, you pump iron for an hour or two. you fatigue the muscles, they break down. What happens if you never give them a chance to rest and recover?
That's a good question. And I actually want to clear something up, not to correct you, but this is actually new science. So we used to think from a scientific perspective that we broke down tissue so that it would build back stronger.
Yeah, micro tears.
Exactly. The research seems to suggest two things now. One, the delayed onset muscle soreness that we feel, that's actually at the level of the neurons. It's not actually our muscle. It's our neural tissue that gets worn out. Yeah. And so that inflammatory response around the neural tissue. And that's why usually if you start a new program, the first week is terrible. The second week's not so bad. And then by the third week, you're good. It's not because you grew a bunch of muscle in 3 weeks. It's because your neural tissue has adapted to this stressor, right? But the second thing, though, that's really powerful and important is that exercise is a stressor just like any other stressor. And it affects us at the level of our DNA. And so when you're growing muscle, we're not actually breaking down muscle tissue so that it grows back stronger. We're actually signaling to every individual muscle cell that there are genes within us that need to be unlocked in order to create stronger tissue, in order to create larger tissue, right? And so those genes that are methylated are coded for new proteins that increase the amount of fluid around the muscle cell. So there's fuel to pull from that increase the tensile strength of your myofibrils and your sarcomeres. And also things like the amount of receptors in the muscle tissue to respond to the neuron that tells it to fire, right? And so when we stress our muscle tissue and we tell our DNA, hey, we need to do XYZ to be better next time. Like that's basically what we're doing. We're unlocking a part of ourselves that was there but wasn't being used. When we do that, the recovery process thereafter is giving the cell time to respond to the stressful messenger that's been, you know, downplayed. So let's say you do two leg days in a row. You told every muscle cell in your quadricep, like, man, it's all about the gain train, baby. We need some bigger quads, you know, like light those suckers up. And the muscle's like, okay, hey, I got your message. It's cool. We're going to start growing that thing. We're going to make it stronger. And then the next day you do legs. Well, you've interrupted the process flow, man. Like you've messed up your body's ability to respond to the message that you sent the DNA. And therefore you've methylated the response, but then you've cut it off at the knees. So now the body has to respond in fight or flight to the next stressor, right? And so so all that to say, the muscle growing process is stress the DNA, methylate the genes that are required to grow your muscle, and then allow the recovery process and feed it well. So it has all the building blocks it needs to do its job.
Yeah, it does sound like a perfect parallel for the stress response, you know, in terms of the ideal is to become stressed. Stress is good for us at some level. You know, it energizes us. It's our body giving us energy to prepare for a challenge. It can focus our concentration. It can speed our decision-making. And so if we look at it with the right mindset, it's very effective and helpful, but then we also need to learn to turn it off in order to recover from it.
That's exactly right. And studies have shown in this relatively new science that 7-8 weeks from now, if you've done 1 week of hypertrophy, that's hypertrophy growth, that's growth training for muscle tissue, relatively heavy weights, 8 to 12 repetitions, decent amount of rest in between. If you do that for a week, 7 weeks later, the genetic blueprint for creating that muscle tissue will still be methylated, which is really powerful. So people think if I can't start a workout program and stay consistent for forever, I just shouldn't do it at all. And it's like, no, like if you can be consistent for a couple of weeks, that really will adapt your body for the long haul, especially if you can come back to it regularly.
Yeah, it's great advice. I love it. So do you get into programming with your clients, or do you get into, you know, Monday's leg day, Tuesday's, I don't know, arms, chest, back, Wednesday aerobic?
Right. Yeah. At Defining Dad Bod, we do three types of virtual coaching, and all of it is day by day. It's as nitty gritty as it gets. You literally get like the email in the morning from us. This is your homework. You know, do this, this, this. Here are the videos. If you don't know what that movement looks like, communicate with us. Depending on how this felt for you, and we can switch it out. It's very nitty gritty. So, but yeah, we're I like to joke, there's probably an app for that, but nobody cares on the other side of the app. So that's where we kind of fit in.
So do you also get into diet? Because one of the things I've heard from amateur bodybuilders that I've worked out with is, you know, getting your body to the point that you want is 20% workout, 80% diet.
Yeah. And that actually comes from a study where they looked at weight loss. They put some people on some exercise programming, they put people on nutrition programming, and then they looked at the amount of weight they lost. And they found that about 80% of weight lost comes from the nutrition side of things. Those people lost about 80% of the weight that was lost in total in the study. Again, it comes back to this overall picture, right, of stressing the DNA and then allowing it to recover. If you don't have the building blocks required to allow the machinery of the cell to execute the message of the DNA, then you're not going to get very many benefits from your exercise program. So you work out really well, and you're like, all right, Alex said to stretch for 5 minutes after my workout. I do that. And then I go eat Domino's pizza. I like to pick on Domino's pizza because they just sent my son home with a fundraiser to sell their pizzas in the third fattest state in the U.S., and I just can't handle it. So anyway, you finish this workout, and you feed yourself Domino's pizza. Well, what is that? Are these awesome plant polyphenols and some good vitamins and minerals and a healthy dose of protein? No, it's a bunch of processed, empty carbohydrates and fats with a little bit of protein and a whole bunch of nitrates, you know? And so what the hell is your cell supposed to do with that? Like, it's like giving a guy who's building your house, here's the blueprint for the best house ever. And he's like, great. Where are we getting the materials from? And you unload a big giant garbage truck full of shit in the driveway and go, I need you to build that into that house. And so that's what happens. And that's what happens in exercise programming pretty often is that people will work out. And then from a nutrition standpoint, you know, they're like, I worked out so I can eat whatever I want. That's the calorie problem, right? I worked out so I can eat whatever I want. And that's the wrong way to look at it. That's energy balance, and that's not building you into a better you. So nutritionally speaking, there are a lot of things we can do to build a better you and improve your testosterone and whatnot. But we can get into that if you'd like.
Yeah, my mind's going to several different directions at once, which normally happens. ADHD? I don't know. Anyway.
I feel that.
I find I get excited when I have these conversations, right? So my mind just goes poof. One of the things that I wanted to touch on is, and we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but I wanted to get your feedback on or your thoughts on sort of body dysmorphic issues. So I guess when I started in psychology, I used to think that things like bulimia, anorexia, you know, body dysmorphia, that those were female issues. And this was, you know, 25, 30 years ago. And then I started getting clients, right, that male clients that would work out constantly, and they'd have, you know, 3-5% body fat, and it became obsessive, and it would destroy relationships, and it became unhealthy on many levels. And it kind of woke me up to, holy shit, like, men have this issue too. And then I realized it wasn't just a small section of men. I think it's all of us, in the sense that, now we don't all go to that extreme, but I do think that because of the negativity bias in the mind, where we over-focus on negative thoughts, negative emotions, negative self-definitions, you know, I'm a fat loser, whatever it is, we tend to over-focus on the parts of our body that we hate the most. And, you know, you might be satisfied with 95% of your body, but our eyes are drawn to that 5% of, you know, I don't know, the love handles. So do you have any thoughts about that? And what's the goal then with that body? Like, when is enough enough?
Such a good question. I'm so glad you asked that. So one of the things that we do in our process that I think is extremely important is we start with our clients identifying their health and fitness heaven and their health and fitness hell. We believe that part of the motivational process is that we should be running from something and running toward something, Right. Now, when people first start with us, oftentimes they are saying things like, you know, I really need to work on the stomach. I really need to work on this. I really need to work on that. They have a picture in their minds of body parts they need to trim up or shape up, right? But what happens through the process of coaching especially, but also through the process of transformation, is you find that looking good is not enough when all of the other priorities in your life tend to be, counter to looking good, right? And you find yourself in moral dilemmas where it's like, do I go for a run or do I have ice cream with my kid? Like, ooh, is the six pack as important as spending time with my child? And so what's really interesting about what I've learned through developing this business and working with guys especially is that dad bod can mean more than just the what you look like. Like, it's not just like, oh, I've got strong shoulders and arms and back. And don't get me wrong, a guy's body image is an extremely important part of who he is. However, it's extremely important that your nutrition, that your exercise, that your lifestyle is in good integrity with all of the things that are important to you, right? So the nice line in there, John, and I think this is, it's hard to define, but the nice line in there is this: if your nutrition is building a body that won't let you be there for your kids in the way you'd like to be there for them, that's something we need to change. And that goes both ways. You can eat so super stinking healthy that your kid doesn't know what French toast with dad on Friday morning looks like, and you're missing out, bro. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you can eat so unhealthy that you pass on really crummy nutrition habits to your kids, right? Yeah. So there's a healthy place in there. And a lot of times what I ask guys is this: what do you want your kids' exercise and nutrition habits to be like when they're adults? Because oftentimes I find guys are more willing to take good care of their kids than they are themselves. Mm-hmm. And so when they look at their son or they look at their daughter and they think, hey, what do I want them to be thinking or feeling about exercise and nutrition in their 20s? They don't want them worried about every little calorie that goes in their face, and they don't want them at the gym 10 hours a week, right? What they want for them is to be healthy and happy, to manifest their potential, to enjoy that pursuit. And then also, hey, some of the finer things in life aren't good for you at all. I love a good bourbon here and there, man. It's not great for my testosterone, so I don't do it regularly, but I enjoy Basil Hayden is my favorite. If you're ever in town,
I'll check it out.
Sit down to a room. So that being said, the line really is in understanding how your health and fitness fits in with the priorities of your life, and that keeps you from walking too extreme on the course of either anorexia, bulimia, exercise bulimia, body dysmorphia. Now there are people who have wrestled with that and they have a history of that walking into our sessions, and that's kind of a different situation entirely.
Yeah, it's an excellent answer. I think from what you're saying, it sounds like it boils down to moderation and functionality. And it amazes me. I remember, you know, I'm thinking back on some of the amateur bodybuilders that I've worked with, and they're, you know, eating chicken and rice 8 times a day and, you know, cutting body fat. And like, they'll show me pictures of, you know, what they look like pre-competition. And it's like, holy shit, that's amazing. And they're like, yeah, but look at this guy. And they go to, like, I don't know, like an Olympic class bodybuilder. And like, look at the biceps there. And it really drives home the point to me of, you know, the mind, one of the ways the mind works, right, is by comparison. And to the extent that we're doing these upward social comparisons where we compare ourselves to someone that's better off than us in some way, bigger biceps, bigger dick, better looking wife, girlfriend, bigger house, better car, whatever it is, we make ourselves more miserable. And so I think to be aware of that dynamic with our minds becomes really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the time scale of the goal is important too, right? So a lot of the health and fitness world, as you understand it, or the average Joe on the street understands it, a lot of that comes from the bodybuilding community. Mm-hmm. It's hard to argue with, man. Those people look amazing and they're doing amazing things. It's kind of jaw dropping, you know, it's eye catching. But you have to understand that everything they've done is for that very short term 3 pictures on the stage. And that's not, those snapshots maybe for them is very fulfilling, but is that what you're working toward? And if that's not what you're working toward, if that's not fulfilling to you, then you might have a very different goal in mind, even though you've pinned that image to it.
Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right. Do you want to work that hard and that long to get to that position? Kind of back to your idea of moderation and functionality. The other thing that I really appreciate along this vein is the social media influencers, I guess I'll call them like Instagram influencers, who are, you know, kind of those, I don't know, they're workout people, they're bodybuilders, or, you know, people that are showing us how to stay in shape. And they'll do kind of the side-by-side photos of, this is me, you know, like looking my best. This is me bending over. Or this is me sitting down with the rolls on the stomach. Because no matter how fit you are, you're still going to have those rolls of skin. And for some of us, it's fat as well. But I think that's part of it, is that realization, just like Facebook is showing us, you know, kind of these carefully cultivated, you know, pictures of the best moments in people's lives. So are some of these photos on social media showing us these carefully cultivated photos of the best way a body can look. But even that body doesn't look that way all the time. It's still not going to look very elegant on the toilet, let's just say.
Nobody does, guessing. Right?
We all look a little sheepish, like my dog taking a dump in the middle of the road. You know, it's just how it works.
Sheepish,
which he does at times. It's really embarrassing. Right in front of the car in a crosswalk. Like, do I pick that up? I don't know.
Now, I did, to your very original question, though, about boosting testosterone naturally, I did want to make sure that I threw a few things that might be helpful to some people listening as well, that's simple to implement. One, your vitamin D and your magnesium are very closely tied to your ability to produce testosterone. So if you're vitamin D deficient, you're not getting 20 minutes of sun on half your body every day, then you should probably be taking a vitamin D supplement. How much really requires you to know how vitamin D deficient you are. For me, I take a maintenance amount at 2,500 IU every day throughout the winter, right? And I recommend that to my clients as well. Mm-hmm. If you do have a test that shows you vitamin D deficient, then you might need up to 10,000 IU or more daily.
Per day, to get that.
Yeah, picked up. It's a fat-soluble vitamin, so it takes a while to really get into the system. And this is especially important now with the pandemic that we're working with, because the comorbidity of vitamin D deficiency is significantly linked to hospitalization with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So one of the positive things you could do.
If I can jump in there.
Yeah, go ahead.
We've been inside for a while with the fires in California. Like, we weren't even going outside. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I need to up my vitamin D, because I'm not getting any sun.
Exactly. Yeah. Treat yourself just like you're in the winter right now. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, I go outside all the time. I'm like, your forearms and your forehead can only make so much vitamin D. Right? The way this works is, like, the UV rays hit you, and your skin has a special mechanism, a special process to take the cholesterol in your bloodstream and convert it to vitamin D. And people think of vitamin D as a vitamin like any other. Vitamin D is actually a hormone. It acts in your body like a hormone, and it's part of the testosterone synthesis process. And then most people who are deficient in vitamin D are also deficient in magnesium, since vitamin D plays into magnesium metabolism. And so if you want to boost your testosterone, one of the things you can do is get your vitamin D up and start supplementing with magnesium, or getting it from your diet, right? Because that's an easy thing to be deficient on.
Is that leafy green vegetables?
Leafy green vegetables is a primary source, nuts and seeds and whole grains as well. For people who are really watching their macronutrient intake, maybe you're trying to lose fat at the same time, many of the things that are high in magnesium are also high in fats and carbohydrates. So it's hard sometimes to work that in with diet. I generally recommend supplementation if you are also regulating fats and
carbohydrates. Supplementation at what level?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Supplementation at what level?
Magnesium bisglycinate is the best form of magnesium because it's easy to absorb. So magnesium bisglycinate at 5 grams a day will do you just fine. Okay.
And let me ask you a couple questions. So these were the arguments or discussions that I was having with friends. Does us men socializing with beautiful women, does that raise testosterone naturally?
It does. From an evolutionary perspective, the study's been repeated several different times. You just looking at pictures of pretty women on Instagram will raise your testosterone. The problem with that is it will also make you rate your mate as significantly less attractive than you did 20 minutes ago. So there's a given. There's a give and take there, right? You'll boost your testosterone hanging out with pretty women, but you'll also... right. Yes. So I tend not to recommend that sort of thing. In the goal. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I guess if you're polygamous and that's fine, but in my world, my wife wouldn't appreciate me, using Instagram models to boost my testosterone. Okay, so that being said, I generally like to help guys get from a nutritional perspective.
What about lifting weights?
Go ahead.
Lifting weights?
Absolutely. Yes, that boosts testosterone. Three to four bouts per week of 30 minutes on compound movements, things like bent over rows, pull-ups, chest press, leg press, squats, deadlifts. Those are all compound joint movements. They hit the body really well, and that'll be enough to boost your testosterone as well.
Now, what about non-natural means to boost testosterone?
There's probably just as many of those as there are supplements in the world, right? There's the old school bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. So that's, you know, you get your testosterone shot or your testosterone pill or your testosterone patch. There are a lot of doctors in the U.S. who can recommend that based on just a quick, you know, lab test. And then there are things that it goes a little further in that you can also do things that are testosterone replacement therapy, but there are a few other things you have to take to keep you from converting that testosterone to estrogen, for instance, or, you know, succumbing to things like aggression and acne. And then there's an up and coming, it's kind of a black market sort of thing. They're called SARMs. They're specific androgenic receptor, molecules, and what they do is they act on very specific parts of the DNA in order to activate the release of more testosterone. And we've done some studies on those in things like cancer, or when people have had to have their gonads removed, for instance. We've done studies on those things, but how they affect the general population, like, you have to get pretty black markety to get a hold of SARMs. Gotcha. On the regular, and I don't recommend it. I think we need to give that research base probably about 10, 15 more years before you start experimenting on yourself.
All right. Well, and I'm just looking at the time, and it's time to wrap up. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have, and where can people get a hold of you?
I appreciate that question. You know, the primary thing that I like to make sure that I leave people with is that your health and fitness journey really is a journey. That up until this point, for many people, they have tried a lot of programs. They've tried a lot of short-term things. And I encourage people to think of it like hike with benchmarks. Like, until you die, you're headed in that direction. And if we can manifest the best in you as you move in that direction, then you'll be happy with your health and fitness throughout this process, because it really is the foundation for you to live life in a way that your body's not an obstacle to you living life well. Right. So that being said, you can find my work just about anywhere on social media. We do Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Defining Dan Bond. You can find our website with all of those things housed in it at DefiningDanBond.com. And then I generally recommend if people enjoy the podcasting way of things, then we have a podcast that I pour a lot of time and energy into, and that we give away for free and is listener supported. And that's at, you can find that on iTunes, your favorite podcast app, Defining Dad Bod.
All right. So it's all Defining Dad Bod. Great, great branding. Consistent. You got it. I like it. Hey, well, Alex,
well, and it was
so
funny,
much.
You know, like,
go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, thanks, man. I was going to say, it was funny when we first launched all these things, it was like, Defining Dad Bod, oh, nobody's doing that. That's cool. So we have all of those things. Nobody's defining the dad bod.
Well, again, and thank you so much for joining me, Alex. Great interview, great information. And I think it's really important for the men out there.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for what you do, and keep it up. Okay.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alex. And that's it for this episode of The Evolved Caveman. Until next time, I'm Dr. John.
Thank you for listening to the Evolved Caveman podcast. If you like what you've heard, support us by subscribing, leaving reviews, and sharing the podcast with friends and colleagues. For the latest, most powerful tools to connect with like-minded men, join the Facebook group at The Evolved Caveman. Follow Dr. John on Instagram at The Evolved Caveman, all one word, or join the email list by visiting guidetoself.com.